With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Raptors Over Everything podcast for Yahoo Sports Canada. I'm your host, William Liu. Joining me to empty out the Twitter mailbag, and this is a very substantial mailbag. I asked for questions in this afternoon, and we have received about 150 in the span of 4 hours. So people are curious, people have concerns, and Joshua, what are we going to do? What are we going to do with these Raptors? 1-5.
Peyton Pritchard over everything. It's what we're claiming now.
Goodness. That kid was nice. I knew he was gonna do us like that too, because he's been sneaking up on everybody. He's good.
They really score. They found one. That's
congratulations to Danny Ainge. They have finally, for the first time in a very, very long time, hit on a pick who wasn't like a top three pick. So
yeah,
good for them. Nah, I'm just kidding. Actually, what's his name? Jaylen Brown. People were saying coming into the draft, Jaylen Brown is like he's Jeff Green. This. And Jaylen Brown's nice, man. He'd probably be our best player right now. Let's be quite honest.
Facts.
So anyways, like I said, we have 150 questions. So let's race through them. I apologize in advance if we couldn't get to them. Again, 150.
A lot of them are going to have the same themes. Like, what can we trade Pascal for? Is Kyle Lowry leaving? Things
fantastic.
Of that nature.
I can't wait. I can't wait personally to do this one. Let's start here. So biggest concern. So the Raptors are 1-5. This one from Craig asks, what is the Raptors' biggest concern? All right. So he lists losing 4 of the first 5 while winning the fourth quarter. Bane/Boucher being replacements for Gasol/Ibaka. Powell struggles. Siakam struggles. Nurse not giving Matt Thomas or TD2 enough time. Or OG forgetting how to shoot. So first off, the biggest problem is that all these are currently problems. When you have this many problems, yeah.
To me, the biggest problem is Nick Nurse seems to like not trust half of his 10 rotation players. Like, it sounds like this outside of Kyle, Fred, Chris Boucher has been okay.
Mm-hmm.
Stanley Johnson, who does Nick Nurse trust to be out there?
Yeah,
it's like nobody. That's the problem. It's that like Nick Nurse hates his team right now, which is very concerning. Because Nick Nurse seems like he likes everybody. Every day that goes by, he's like, first, Pascal's got to be get better, obviously. Then like Norm Powell's not showing shit so far. Got to get better. Yesterday, TD2 and Matt Thomas, they can't play defense. They can't play. Malachi Flynn, what are you expecting me to do? That guy's a bum. And then, Malachi looked not so good, but maybe Nick Nurse had something there. It's crazy. He does not trust anybody who wears a Raptors jersey. Yeah. It is so – I was trying to think of, like, what's going on. I don't know if you've ever been in the workplace where there's a round of layoffs and – it like the morale never recovers. I know you work in sports media, so this hits close to home, but I've been a part of us. Like, I work in the startup scene.
Mm-hmm,
startups
mm-hmm.
have big layoffs. You lose like the wrong 2 or 3 people and nothing ever comes back. That's what it feels like is happening with the Toronto Raptors right now. I almost named the startup company I used to work at. That's what it feels like losing Serge, losing Mark. It's just like, the parts of an okay team are still there, but man, is it horrible. Anywho,
yeah, what was the question? I don't know why you had to make that specific analogy. Just get a no comment on that. No, Craig asked, what is Raptor's biggest concern? Essentially, I mean, that's the question, because he went on to list so many things. I think the biggest concern is that all these are concerns, but I think maybe we can kind of boil it down to, is this using the talent issue, or is this not having a talent issue, right? Because that is fundamentally what's being said here. Because if it's a how to use a talent, then give him time, You trust the coach. I know some people are already saying, how long can we fire Nick Nurse?
What are you talking about?
Can we just please relax? Okay, please. All right, let's just not go too far now, all right? They're like, Nick is washed without Nate Bjorkgren. That's been my favorite line. Which, listen, nothing against Nate whatsoever. I'm actually thrilled that he got the job. Really happy that he's doing well in Indiana. But can we just, for like half a second, relax and just think about the fact that assistant coaches don't change that much? You know, so is it a coaching issue, or is it essentially how to make it work, or is it that it is fundamentally broken?
I think it can be both. I think the flawed roster has made it so that the team would have to execute really well to be successful. Like the fact that you don't have any forward depth is a problem, mm-hmm. which puts a lot of pressure on your three backup rotation guard, Norm, TD2, Matt Thomas, and Malachi Flynn. Those guys all need to play really well. And the fact that like none of them are, Norm is like 2018-19 level Norm, not 2019-20 level Norm, but so he's okay. The other three have been bad. It kind of sues your team because mm-hmm. Chris Boucher, like, as funny as I thought it was, like in September saying like Stanley Johnson's going to have a chance to crack the rotation. It's because the cupboard's bare. And when the cupboard's bare, you play guys like Stanley Johnson with a straight face, real mm-hmm. NBA minutes. And that's not good. I think to me, it's sort of the roster is not good. Masai and Bobby did not do a good enough job in the offseason to put together a squad that makes sense. And then, you've given Nick Nurse a really hard challenge because if this team's going to be successful, they're going to have to be really, really well coached, and they don't seem to be right now. And you know, there's going to be reasons around the relocation or whatever it is that guys are thinking about. That's not basketball. And I understand that, but to me, this is the first time, and we'll get to it. This is the first time in Masai's tenure that he's like let the organization down because it's a bad team.
I mean, look, I'm still more on the case of, first of all, I do agree it's both, right? I don't think the roster construction is very good, and I do think that there are some limits to the talent. I think some of the limits to the talent is the fact that some of the talent has regressed, and I think Norm and Pascal being the biggest cases. Sure. But I do think some of it is still a fit thing. Like, you can maybe try to make it work. I really do believe that if the Raptors can find a lineup where they can just put five dependable players out there, that'd be great. At the moment, there haven't been five dependable players. Kyle is probably the closest to the, in terms of who's most dependable. Like, you just come into the game, you're like, who's gonna have a good game? Kyle's gonna have a good game. Fred
is been great. He's been unbelievable. Great. Fred has like completely impressed. Like, he's been out of control. He's like, I think he has like five games scoring over 25 and he's been remarkable.
He shouldn't have to do this. That this is like not his role, but he is at least stepping up, and I appreciate that a lot. So those two, dependable. Pascal has been good, like one and a maybe like Pascal has been like a C, maybe a C minus to start the year. So he's not really there. OG has had one good game, maybe two, but like really one good game. Norm has not had a good game.
He was not bad in a few games, though. He was not bad against the Knicks. I guess it's the Knicks, yes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, you're right. The next game, I'll give him the one.
He was like nearing good in that game.
Yeah. Boucher has been good in about half the games. Honestly, I have no complaints about Boucher.
Len's been okay because you don't expect anything from him.
You just expect him to just like be there, hold your hands up. You're 7 feet tall. Get the rebound. Get out the way. Which honestly, I know that sounds like I'm dissing the guy. That's more than what Baines has been doing.
Yeah.
So that's tough. But yeah, I mean, I think it. The talent is better than this. The talent is not 1-6. The talent may be closer to 500, but they need to get the talent performing. And honestly, there are some honest fit issues, because if you can't even get five good players on the floor at once, you're just not going to win, especially against good teams. And the Raptors have played a few good teams. It hasn't been that difficult of a schedule so far, to be honest, but still, they haven't played like, Well,
they haven't gone on their West Coast road trip where they typically go 1-for-4, and now it's going to be a lot worse.
Yeah,
geez. It's going to be not good.
Yeah, this is tough. All right, next question from my guy Drew, our legend. This guy, honestly, Raptors could use Drew right now. This guy is how would I describe him? He's like Steph. He's the Steph Curry of the Raptors Republic tournament. You can make up that what you want. He asked Jalen, Cade, or Kuminga, but actually, will Pascal and Norm ever show up? Find out next time on Dragon Ball Z. It has been like that. It has been Pascal and Norm just going, for like 20 minutes and then a tease for next game. Let's go with the Pascal and Norm part of this question. Will they ever show up? Let's talk about Norm first, because I think we have like 8 questions on Pascal. So let's start with Norm. Is Norm going to show up?
So 2020 was obviously an aberration. Like, he was really, really good for stretches. I still believe in Norm being like a productive role player, 6th, 7th, 8th man off the bench for this team, and think he can land there. I think he's asked to do more. I don't know. Like, I feel less upset with Norm than maybe I ought to, because he's doing Norm Powell stuff, and he's kind of done that throughout his tenure as a Rat, his whole career. Will he ever show up? I think he's already kind of shown Norm flashes. He's less focused on defense than I think he has been in previous years. But I think it has a lot to do with this team is playing with their booty holes clenched. Like, whenever they're bleeding, Norm Powell and Pascal Siakam both lose their minds. The like 13-point lead that they build in the second quarter starts to like slip away, both of them completely melt down. I don't know why. Mm-hmm. Like, you would think that those guys would have the composure, but it's happening to even Chris Boucher. Kind of looks like he's losing his composure when he'll like run out on a 3-pointer and or like run out to the 3-point line and commit a stupid foul, and that stuff is bad. And I don't know. Am I expecting Norm to not do that again? No, because I've watched that guy for his whole career, and I don't think that's going away. That's my Norm position, is that he's the bad side of normal for him, and we can cross off a repeat of 2020 coming into this year. It's not happening, but he's not off the charts bad. He's Norm.
I mean, look, I think, is Norm going to get going is really a question of how much do you think Norm can realistically give you every night?
Yeah.
Last year, the situation for Norm worked out perfectly. He had a career year, but if you look at the scope of his career, that is clearly the one aberration year, just statistically. But then if you look at the factors that contributed to it, the Raptors played amazing defense last year. The Raptors still pretty good defensively this year. It's probably the only thing they do well is defend. Even though when you watch it, it doesn't look that solid. But like, results-wise, they have been solid outside of this Celtics game where they just gave up. But because they were so good on defense, they're able to fuel their transition game and they're able to score. This is a global problem for the Raptors. But let me just give you Norm-specific numbers. So Norm last year, 30% of his offense was in transition. Always a little bit unsustainable, because you're never going to play a game where you had that much in transition. Or honestly, you better be like LeBron James, like 2008 MVP LeBron, like in or 2009 MVP LeBron, right? Or Giannis, for example. But Norm, last year, 30% possession in transition of all his shots, 1.22 points per play, effective field goal percentage, 66%. And he scored 5.1 points per game in fast breaks.
Do you have a 3-point percentage in transition there? I'd be curious, because that's Seward. Because that seems to, like, the Raptors were just ahead, were like a full point ahead of the Lakers in transition points last season. And this year, they're like, there's like tier, and then they're in the middle of the pack. Like, I think they're in like a 9-way tie for 7th or so. Like, there's a pack that the Raptors are in. I wonder, to me, it's like Aaron Baines and Norm Powell are killing the Raptors in transition. Aaron Baines can't jump. He can't seem to finish anything. It's brutal. And Norm Powell can't seem to hit a three in transition anymore, which is not good.
Yeah. Yeah, so Norm, this season in, all right, only six games, right? Still getting 27% of his shots in transition, which is still quite good. His points per possession went from 1.22 to 0.88 points per possession. He's only scoring 2.5 points per game in transition, which is half of what he did last year. His field goal percentage in transition, you ready for this? 23.1%.
So
how are you shooting 23% on a fast
with
break?
With nobody in front of you. I wonder what his three-point – like, I feel like he hasn't hit a three yet, and I think that's what's driving his total field goal percentage. But, yeah, it's bad. It's – the Raptors' transition offense is, like, kind of that, like a joke. That, I only trust Fred now.
They needed it last year. And, yeah, Fred, he's going to get his layups blocked a couple of times. The Raptors last season – in terms of points per possession on the fast break, the Raptors scored 1.15. That was the third best rate. However, the Raptors also got out in transition and played in transition more than any other team. So the Raptors were the best team in transition last year. This year, the Raptors' points per possession in transition is 0.97. Every other team in the NBA, even though it's only early in the season, small sample size, you know, COVID has delayed games. Every other team is over one, generally over 1.1. So the Raptors are at 0.97. They're still getting out in transition. They're just bricking.
This team's not good, man. Like,
that I do think some of that will come back because if you're in transition, you're going to make some layups eventually.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's bad. In terms of what Powell can actually give you, I mean, here's the thing. I thought about Nick using Stanley the other day, and I was like, all right, so why would you want to use Stanley? Well, you know, off the bench. Right, you still need a wing defender, right? Because OG's gonna have to sit. Teams stagger the lineups, like you saw Tatum or Brown out there at all times. Mm-hmm. So when OG sits, who's guarding that guy? And I was thinking, well, you can't ask Norm to do it, right? So you must pair Norm with someone who's able to play defense. So they're like, all right, I'll put Stanley out there. And then you're thinking, well, I need Boucher on the floor, but he can't rebound. So you know what? I'll play him at the four, and then I guess I'll put Alex Len out there. And all of a sudden, four of your players are Norm Powell, Stanley Johnson, Alex Len, and Chris Boucher. And no disrespect to any of those four players. But what are you doing? What are you doing? What? You know what I mean? Like, what are you doing, right? So,
oh, man.
It's tough. I don't know how much you can really expect out of Norm. I mean, you expect him to play some better defense because that's really his own decision whether he's going to play defense or not. But, yeah.
Norm is the first team all bad reach and foul. Like, it's just,
why did he do that at the end of that game? I mean, honestly, even if Ingram scored, I could accept that. You know what? A superstar play, but you're just going to bail him out? Like, come on. By the way, Norm this year shooting 35% from within 3 feet. Last year, it was 66%. So it has to normalize. He's never shot lower than 59.6%. But damn, at the moment, it is looking real tough for Norm.
That was a good laugh.
Why does he have this one move in his bag? And I don't think I've seen other players with the move in his bag where he'll come off the high pick and roll, get into the paint, one step into the paint, like at the free throw line, and then just flick the ball at the basket running. I don't know why anyone has chosen to take that shot, but that feels like one of those shots that you see in like the 1960s when you like see like black and white Dolph Shays.
I do think Norm will sort of steady the ship. He's not come out looking very good, but he's not come out looking unlike I've seen Norm before. It's just.
Yeah, I was gonna say, let's not pretend like we haven't seen this from Norm. No, don't be surprised.
Yeah, okay. Like what were you guys doing in 2017? Like, this was Norm Powell.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, but listen, if we get to the playoffs, Norm's gonna swing one or two games. That's also a fact too.
For sure.
Yeah. Just a nice guy to have as your ninth man. As a sixth man, I don't know. Digital Poet asked, now that Boston has shown in the playoffs last season that the league how to defend Siakam, mostly by matching his speed and not his size, how does he counter? So we're on the Pascal portion of the podcast. Pascal, poor guy, man. I feel so bad for him. I don't know, man. But yeah, how does he counter the speed aspect? I think honestly, he just needs to go up strong. Like, I know that sounds like so rudimentary and it's like not that simple, but sometimes like yesterday he had Peyton Pritchard on him, and Peyton is like a very talented offensive player for sure. Defensively, he's shorter than me,
yeah,
and he's small, Like, he's small. He's DJ Augustin size. And Pascal had him in the post, one-on-one. The spin move, I thought he was for sure going to the spin move because there was no help defender coming from the left side of the floor. Oh. Use the spin move, get to your right hand, put the layup in, right? It should be easy, and I've seen Pascal do it a million times, but he couldn't do it, which is just so weird to me. It seems like he doesn't have a game plan in the post anymore. What do you think?
Yes, I don't really have much to say about, like, I was saying to you earlier that the reaction to Pascal is a lot like when a player unexpectedly gains a lot of weight and they're like, oh, this guy's game is gone. He looks horrible. He's being talked about like 2010 Boris Diaw. It's very reminiscent of that, like, discourse.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. Like, it's just, it seems like
but the it's hard monster, to explain yeah. when a player just, like, you know, exactly. what you said, monster, yeah. they get monster.
Yeah. I, you know, the, like, Pascal online bullying stuff last year was really shameful, and I hope that discourse around them that you influence as, you know, the voice of the Raptors fans doesn't get there again, but it's bad. It's bad right now, and I hope that he turns around. He's still a great player.
Yeah.
He's going to be with the Raptors for a long time, no matter what, I can't imagine. Mm-hmm. Don't think there's much of a trade market for him now, so I hope he turns it around. I like Pascal. It's unexplainable. It's as mysterious as, like, if you learn that he had a cappuccino machine in his hotel room in the Orlando bubble and it suited his career. It's that level mystery to me.
Mm-hmm. Maybe that's it. Bobby Webster's been spiking these cappuccinos, man. Maybe switch out the beans, Bobby.
Yeah, he's skinny, fat Boris Diaw. That's my only explanation for now.
I love Boris Diaw, man. What a
yeah, so did I.
Rare
I
player.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's great. When did he leave the league? Like 2000? He was in Utah at the end.
He was in Utah. There was like a slight rumor he might come to Toronto, and I was like, "Yes, we need Boris Diaw." And
you honestly, wanted old Boris Diaw.
This current 2020, I want 2020. I want Iguodala. I want 2021 Boris Diaw. This team, it can't be worse.
Yeah.
All right. Next question.
Are there more? Yeah.
Yeah, next question. So in terms of the Siakam thing, I just don't feel like he has a game plan in the post anymore, which is so weird because he used to just set up guys so perfectly. And maybe you could set up guys when you have a go-to spin move that teams just, like, couldn't anticipate. But now that every team is sitting on it, and every team knows he wants to get to the middle of the floor, which is not unusual. I mean, that's how most players want to do that. Why doesn't he have, like, a move to the baseline, whether that's like a fallaway jumper or anything like that, or even like spin and then a hook shot or something? It feels like, you know, he wants to post up on the left block, use his right hand, go into the middle and shoot, and teams are sending help, they're timing it quite well, and honestly it doesn't even take very, very diligent defense to stop Pascal anymore. So I think he just needs to expand his post skill set a little bit. You know, like, even JV, for example, when he used to get in the post, he also wanted to get to the sweeping hook shot.
Yeah.
But he had the baseline jumper where he can turn over his shoulder and shoot a short baseline jumper. And
he, for whatever reason, people believed his free throw jumper that he could actually roll to the rim.
That too, yeah.
That was my favorite.
Does Pascal have a pump fake? That's the thing. Like, what moves does he have in his bag other than my arm is very long and I'm athletic and I can reach past you? That's not really beating a defense.
Yeah.
So expand.
I think if Pascal had a pump fake, it would change a lot.
I mean, he would have to make the jumpers first. You know what? To be honest, maybe not even, because JV didn't really make the jumpers like that. No. And people still jump.
Well, he was okay. Like, there was this, I like JV's free throw line jumper. It always seemed to be money in the first quarter of a playoff game and then abandon him after halftime.
Well, that's how it went. He was the most invisible 7-footer out there. Somehow,
man,
the guys just couldn't see him when he was wide open.
It would always be like Jack coming back from commercials saying 11 points in 11 minutes for JV, and it's just like, all right, end of the game, 13 points.
Yep, that's how it went. Skeens asks, I think it's time to start Pascal at the five and play small ball. Baines has shown he's not good enough to start for us. The only issue with starting Pascal at the five is that I don't think he likes playing five. And maybe you can just say, like, forget it, man. You're 1-5. I don't care what you like. You just go play from five. But I don't think he likes playing five extended stretches. I think his physicality doesn't match up. It will be similar to I would rather play Boucher at five than Pascal at five, quite honestly. Because I think you're offering some of the same weaknesses up to the opponents to carve out. And I just don't like when you have a star player and you just change his role constantly. Because he was a power forward, kind of a 3-4, but a 4. Yeah. Then we're like, be a 3, play on the perimeter, do all this other stuff. Now you're going to play a 5 and do all this other stuff. I mean, positions are kind of meaningless until the point – positions are meaningless between 2 and 4 because there's no difference. But when you get to the 5, that's pretty different. When you have to all of a sudden be boxing out Nikola Jokic, that's different. So I don't really
like – Well, OG boxes out Nikola Jokic, but yeah, that's –
I mean, yeah, he does it half the time. Another half the time, OG does very little.
Yeah, okay.
No, I mean, it's just true. It's just true, man. Listen.
I agree.
And that's not new.
Yeah.
Pascal, no. OG has been a guy who goes on streaks and stuff like that. But, you know, I don't know. It's not OG's fault. I'm sorry.
That's isn't OG's fault.
It's a little random. Sorry. Anonymous Bosque 15. Has Fred surpassed Pascal as a young stud for our team? Kyle's a clear leader, but last year Siakam was our number one. But in the past few games, it feels like Fred is stepping into that role and overcoming rather than succumbing to his limitations as a scorer. I like this question because, yeah, that has been there. And it's a weird theme because I don't think Fred is also cut out to be a number one guy. But
yeah, I guess that's it. Like, whatever Fred does is kind of irrelevant given that you don't want him to be your number one option. Like, a team where Fred is your young stud isn't going to be as good as Pascal being your young stud. And that's just kind of, you know, the size difference and ability difference. So, yeah, I guess their point is to say salute to Fred for his great start to the season. And I agree. Fred's looked amazing and Pascal's looked very bad, all things considered. We still like the team. I think Fred even said it, like, the team needs Pascal to play better. He's too important to what they, when they play well, for us to like sort of reshuffle their role.
Yeah. And, but I do appreciate Fred for doing it though.
Yeah. He's been amazing. Like Fred, if
there's, I didn't know he could score like this. Yeah. Like some of the folks in the Celtics game, he was hitting mid-range shots. He seems like he's added like a really arcing mid-range shot because we see him do it against the Knicks a little bit as well. But like, I don't remember seeing him. Well, not I don't remember. I just, the stats don't say that he has been shooting that much in the mid-range.
Yeah.
And that's an area where if you are asked to score more than, you know, the mid-range area is there for him. I don't really see Fred as a consistent number one scorer either, but I don't know, man. Sometimes someone has to do it, and Fred is doing it right now, so credit him.
Yeah, like, if there is a, like, belt for best Raptors, like, organization MVP, it should be Fred for December, and we'll, for December and this last week, Fred has been the best, the most, I've appreciated what he's done the most, because even Kyle, like, yesterday, it seemed like he was, like, not engaged and kind of pissed off at the team. And
yeah, that was really sad to see.
Yeah, it's really
I mean, if Kyle doesn't care, then I don't know, man. You know?
So, yeah, no, it's not good.
Yeah. All right, next question from our guy, Brad. Too much hoops. Yeah, by the way, Raptors, listen, you have a lot of people that depend on you to be good, and too much hoops is not gonna be breaking down one of these losses because there's nothing to break down.
No,
there's emotionally breaking down, but there's no like breaking down of the film. But anyway, Brad asks, let's say Siakam averages the same points per game as last year, 23. Fred averages 20, a career high. Kyle gets you 19. Where are the other 50-ish points coming from? Should they start Boucher to try to get the offense humming a little bit more early?
I kind of like this idea of Boucher starting, especially because Baines has looked so
incompetent.
Yeah, like everybody was hoping for you to connect with Baines fan club, and right now just be
nobody's asked that. Listen, nobody's asked that. Nobody has asked that.
I don't. 50 points is a lot. Can you do this?
All right. Last year,
I feel like you thought through this.
Not really, but like last year, Serge had like give you 15, like a consistent 15. That is just completely missing. Boucher can maybe get to like 10 consistently, maybe 12. depending on how many minutes he plays. There is a bit of a trade-off defensively. I don't think you're getting much from Baines or Len. Offensively, they're just never – I mean, like, you know, Baines had 1 year last year where he had 11. But for the most part, he's been a single-digits kind of guy. I even asked assistant coach Sergio Scariolo, like, hey, are there other aspects that you see from Baines where he plays internationally that maybe there's more, slightly more in his game that you could use? And he was like, no, he's a fine role player. And I was like, oh, well, thank you, Sergio. Your accent made that seem much more nicer than the way it came out. But yeah, I mean, I think you need Norm to at least give you 10 on a consistent basis. I don't know if that's happening for you. And then really, who else are you looking for consistent offense from, right? Like last year, TD gave them consistent offense. Well, not consistent, but gave him like a variability. This year, he's not in the rotation because he seems to have regressed in many, many aspects. Matt was trusted. Nick was like, oh, Matt's actually a good defender. And then 2 nights later, Matt gives up a boatload of points. So the question is, I don't know. The question is, I don't know, man. I mean, I think they kind of expected OG to take a bit of a leap in terms of offensively.
And that's not happened. Yeah.
That has not happened and maybe won't happen. I think maybe expecting Fred to take a bit of a leap, but he's taken another step, which is great to see. Pascal's plateaued. I think he can get back to where he was. At least I hope to.
A long season for Pascal, and but I don't know.
Maybe like Flynn, you know what I mean? Like, but you're really looking at the options. Part of the issues is just so much of the offense comes from guards now. But before, the least they had Pascal scoring in the paint, and they had Serge scoring in the paint. They don't have nobody scoring the paint. Like Fred might lead the team in paint points, man.
It's not good, I guess.
It's looking tough. All right, next question about the defense. My goodness, this is bad. Harsh asks, Raptors generally have a pretty aggressive defense given the sadly limited roster. Is there merit in taking a more conservative approach so that the new guys can integrate faster? What do you think?
What is the question? The Raptors
should they simplify the defense so that you know the new guys can adapt?
I don't know. They gave up 126 points yesterday, 120 on Saturday. Like I don't think the answers are the new guys. I think the answer is the old guy playing better. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I don't think that any of these things just get fixed by saying we're going to give Malachi more opportunities and have him run out there looking. It's his first real NBA minutes, non-garbage time, but he looked shook. Like, I think there's a reason that Nick Nurse didn't want to put him out there with first unit or second unit guys because it was not key. It was not a good scene. If like Matt Thomas is able to return to the form he was in the Brooklyn series and through much of the Boston series and be able to be out there on defense. Mm-hmm. Same with TD2. That's maybe the answer. I don't think it's the new guy. Like, I don't think it's Bembry. I don't think it's Len. I don't think those guys are going to be the ones who solve it for you. I think it's the guys who know and it's true. Like, it's why he's trusting Stanley. Stanley knows what to do out there on defense, and Stanley Johnson's not a super good basketball player. Mm-hmm. But he knows how to go out there and participate in Raptors basketball for 8 minutes at a time. I don't think Bembry's there. I don't think that whoever else Nick Nurse might be looking at saying, let me send you out there.
I mean, look, I could see the case for simplifying the defense only because the Raptors right now scramble a lot. When you scramble and you're not disciplined, you foul. Or you give up mismatches. You also need to be very smart and help for each other. And I don't think that helped defense. There's a lot of misrotations when you watch it. Assad pointed out the other night that if you just watch the Raptors' second line coaches, so not the first row, not Nurse, not Sergio, all the other guys, look in the back line, especially at Jamal McGlure. Guys are just like face palming, like, yo, what the hell are you doing? Like, yo, it's actually amazing.
That's funny.
Because they're making a lot of mistakes. And so I think simplifying defense could avoid things like fouling. Because let's say you're just like giving up a couple jumpers, but you're staying in the paint, generally speaking. You're not rotating. You're not helping off the corners. You probably will foul less because you're not moving as much. the other aspect, the trade-off is that the bigger picture is that's what made the Raptors special was defense and guys being able to play that aggression on defense. You know, Kyle already talked about it before. It's like nobody, it's like we have no swagger anymore. Nobody fears us. You know, people are looking at us like, yeah, we can score on these guys. And that needs to change. Like the Raptors last year had people shook about their defense. And I don't know if simplifying the defense, making yourself a very average team on that front will do anything because offensively they have nothing.
So I think that's it. Like it's the reason why Kyle Lowry gets so animated when TD2 commits a pointless foul. It's because he knows if he's out there doing that kind of crap, he's not going to be in the game and they're going to be worse. But yeah, I think it's to me, it's like I don't think you can give up any of your leverage on defense. Like that's what makes the Raptors a good team, and it will be in any scenario where they continue to be a good team this season or become a good team this season, it'll be driven by a Raptors caliber defensive effort and saying, let's abandon that in search of seeing what Malachi Flynn can do with the pick and roll on the offensive end. I don't know. Doesn't seem right. I think that even for Flynn, he will be a better player when he's able to play Raptors caliber defense and as well as do what he's already gifted at on offense. Give him some time. It's his first year in the league.
Oh, he'll see time today. You'll see time this year. Trust me. He will see time. Yeah. The way this season is going, they're going to pivot and he's going to see time. Don't worry. I wouldn't fret too much about how much we see him now. I'd fret more about how much we're going to see him midway through the season.
Yikes.
Yeah, I'd still say you still have so many of the core guys here. Those core guys continue to play defense the way they are. It's a huge learning curve for guys like Baines and Len, and hopefully they can do it. If like 10 games of the season, the Raptors are not top 10, then, or maybe even 15 into games of the season, the Raptors aren't top 10, then yeah, maybe change it up. But I mean, if you change that up, then you're changing so much that you might have to throw out the whole thing. I mean, I just don't think you should throw the baby out with the bathwater, but you know, at the moment,
imagine the first person who threw their baby out with the bathwater.
I know, and you know, they only bathe like once a month back then. I mean, you know how murky that water must have been. Yeah, it's nasty.
I hope that it's not some like much darker story, and I'm gonna feel like a jackass for making that joke. But the first person who's like, "Well, the baby was in the bathwater. Got to throw this baby out as well." What an idiot.
All right. Next question from S. Who do you trust the most at center for the Raptors this season? And do you think they inevitably will look elsewhere, either buyout market or trade, or to try to fill that void? I do believe that they should or they will look for another center, only because I think you got to give this team at least a little bit of a chance to see what they can do with like one, like just generally okay center. Baines is better than this. I believe it. He just hasn't shown it yet. But he's also quite old. Len is generally speaking what he's showing. And Boucher is, we're already pretty happy with what Boucher is showing. So I don't know if I fully trust any of the three. I think you're going to introduce weaknesses either way. But I was looking this up the other day. If you go on Real GM, there's like a list of free agent centers. And it's
who is the best name? Birdman Chris Anderson.
Honestly, I wouldn't mind that. Listen,
I wouldn't
Morris mind. Diok, Chris Anderson. Who else? Dexter Pittman was in that series. Jamal McGlure. We already have him, I guess.
Was that the Greg Oden year as well?
Like, you think Jamal McGlure is just schooling these guys in practice? Like, do you think Big Cat is just like dunking all over Aaron Baines?
You think he can still dunk?
Yeah, he could definitely still dunk. I've seen him.
Really?
He used to end practice, or he would come out and warm up with guys and whatever, and then afterwards he would throw down a dunk. Like a rim-shaking kind of dunk. No, the Big Cat can still get up, man. Listen, I'm just saying, Nick, I know you're looking at the options down the bench. Look behind you on the bench, all right? That's where you got to be looking at the moment. Okay, so free agent centers. Tyson Chandler.
No way. Okay, too many married guys on this team.
All right. Let's just keep moving. Scott LaVissier. Raptors missed out on him one time. We could get him again. He's a free agent. Yal Mahimni's a free agent. Caleb Swanigan. Honestly, I wouldn't even hate it. Antti Zizic. John Henson. Joakim Noah just retired, but maybe you can call him again. Actually, I think he got canceled, so maybe not Joakim. We got enough of that on this team. Anthony Tolliver is still out there.
John Henson's only 30 years old.
Yes, that is true. He is.
Or he turns 31. 31 at the end of the year.
That, I mean, listen, he'd be younger than Baines. Jordan Bell, Dragan Bender, Jonah Bolden, Dwayne Dedman. Hey, listen, Dwayne Dedman's right there. Henry Ellenson is down the road in the 905. Taj Gibson, Dewan Hernandez.
Old, Taj Gibson's got to be like 53 years old at this point.
Taj Gibson is 35. Yeah, he, nah, enough. Yeah, I mean, you know, those are your free agent options. I mean, it's not.
Oh, John Henson's not that tall. 6'9".
He had long arms. He also wore a t-shirt.
He did have really long
arms. He wore a lot
yeah,
of t-shirts.
Yeah, he wore a t-shirt under his, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, trade for somebody, man, please.
Yeah.
Yeah, trade Norm for a center, please. If you can make that happen.
If you can make the trade, it's like that. It's that bad. I don't really want Norm traded, but it's a disaster.
Listen, man, all good things come to an end. He's always a champion, and he gave us some great moments, and we appreciate it. Drew asks, yeah. Seems like Nick is frustrated with the roster constructions, especially the guard position, but doesn't he need to play the guys he has so that they can have some value on the trade market to fix the problems he sees?
You know, yeah, the roster is bad. It's not good. It's not a good like. I can't wait for one of the like guys of the big papers or the big networks to write the like if it. Well, they couldn't because they're owned by the same guys. Maybe it's you, Will. Maybe you're the only person who can stand up to Masai and say, actually, you did a bad job this time, and this is laid at your feet. Do you have the courage to do this, Will?
I will say, in 2017, when there were some articles about Masai maybe going to the Knicks, I donated $200 to the Giants of Africa and said, please stay. So I don't know if I'm the person that you're looking for to stand up, quote unquote, to Masai. I have posters in the back of photo shoots from Masai's time in Giants of Africa. So, like, I really admire this man generally.
So do I.
But having said that,
it's on him.
It is on him. Yeah, of course. It is on him. The roster as constructed is extremely unbalanced. And this was pointed out long ago. I mean, I asked Nick about this before the season even started. I was like, yo, you got like all these guards. What are you going to do? And Nick's like, I'm not going to play all of them.
And he's like, I'm going to play Stanley Johnson instead.
Bro, just think about this, right? And I pointed this out already, and I'm sorry I'm repeating. But last year, all Nick did was slander Stanley Johnson. If you read Nick's book, his biography, there is a section in there where he talks about he had to sit down with, you know, how to deal with NBA players, right? He had an unnamed player who was a former first round pick who I had to come in and be frank with him and tell him, you're not giving us anything on offense and anything on defense. If this is the way you're going, your career is going to be over. And, you know, he had to work it out. It's pretty clear who that was.
Yeah.
Because he hasn't had that many NBA players to have those head coaching conversations with who are first round picks. But that was the Stanley Johnson that Nick had last year, and he literally ignored him. It was actually like Stanley was injured for part of last year. No one asked him. You know how like Blake always asks, like, hey, you know, is Pat McCaw ready to come back from knee injury or whatever? Like, it's kind of a running bit Blake does. Like, no one was even asking him about Stanley. That's how forgotten he was. And now Nick Nurse is like holding Stanley up as like, yo, Ben Simmons is out there. I need him to guard him. Brandon Ingram's out there. I need him to guard him. You know, and the other night, Jason Tatum's out there. Please, I need Stanley Johnson. So listen, that is just a year changes a lot, you know?
Yeah. Last year, we were able to name our segment on the call-in show about not playing basketball after this man, because we knew that he wouldn't have a chance to influence the outcome of games. Mm. That's not the case this year. It's too bad, but it's like once you saw Rondé leaving and the writing was on the wall for Serge, it's like, okay, well, what other forwards do they have? And,
yeah,
you know, shout out to the Stanimal.
Yep, that's his nickname.
All of that Paul Watson stuff, I found it offensive on his behalf because it was like, who is Paul Watson to completely leapfrog? Like, you're supposed to be an NBA pro. I'm glad that he
listen
cracked the rotation, because it would have been pretty like that's like real bust. Like, yeah.
Nobody believed in Stanley more than us. We mentioned Stanley more than anybody every other outlet plus Nick Nurse had all of last season. Like, and we still
The only person to mention him more was Maul from the Joe Budden podcast. It's a reference you're not going to understand.
I don't. next one from OG Fananobi. Great name.
Nice.
Do you think it was a good decision for Nick to call out Thomas and Davis the way he did? Do you think Nick's mood is a big factor in how the Raptors are playing? Nick generally is a guy with a lot, very sunny disposition. And don't forget, Nick coached in the UK, coached players who, no disrespect to the players, but definitely had to have part-time jobs, maybe full-time jobs. They play basketball on the side, stuff like that. So for Nick to now be so spoiled to be slandering these guys, who, by the way, Matt Thomas in the BBL will probably average like 35, is kind of jarring. But I do think, though, that like there's only so many times you can do this. There's only so many times you can go to the well of like, I need better from you.
Yeah.
Because eventually it's just kind of like,
you get told to F off.
We all suck. It's not just my problem. I'm the ninth man on the team. Sometimes you don't even play me. And you're going to say, well, you're going to talk shit about me. Well, you better talk shit about Pascal or Kyle or Fred then, because it's not just us, you know? Like, has Nick said anything about Aaron Baines, for example? Aaron Baines has given them, like, very, very little.
Has he not said anything about Aaron Baines?
No.
Oh. He's probably convinced that he's still not used to toilets flowing the other way around. So it's...
I want a list of excuses for Aaron Baines. Yeah, but I do think that it's a tough situation. There's only so many times you can go to the well. Like, I don't want to see Nick coming out tomorrow and slandering whoever. He slandered Norman Powell, did nothing. He suspended, the organization suspended Pascal. He fouled out again the next game in less time.
But do you think it was just a Nick Nurse decision to suspend Pascal? No, I have a organization. Feeling. You think that, like, Masai was involved in that decision. In my mind, yeah. Nick Nurse like emailed Masai saying, thinking of benching Pascal, and like Masai's like written from my BlackBerry autoresponder said, like, do whatever you want, Nick.
Yeah.
I don't know. Who's at the wheel of this organization right now? Everything's going badly. Why haven't I don't know.
I would love to hear from Masai or Bobby. And really not from Bobby, because he's not gonna say anything.
Like, have we spotted Masai with his arms crossed by the tunnel at one of these games watching the game yet? I'm not paying that close attention. That's
a good question. I think I've seen Bobby on some of the benches. I don't know if I've seen Masai. It doesn't mean he's not there. He's there in the United States of America, and I'm in Canada in my house, not going outside. So, next one from Deeks. Nick has been pretty sporadic as compared in the past, how he's handling the rotation. He's had a quick trigger, changing guys' minutes. Considering how disconnected the group looks, is that a key contributor to the issues? I think so. I mean, you have a short preseason. You're barely practicing, like the Raptors didn't practice today after that loss. You know, that's just kind of what it is. But also, these guys are professional basketball players, man. Like, work on your craft, and when you're called upon, get ready. Like, it's not all on Nurse, I just don't think. I think... I don't know, man. Yeah, some of these things are.
Yeah, I think that, like, what Nick Nurse is, whenever he's making these quick decisions, it's because the game's falling, like, through their fingers. And he says, you know, I'm trying to think, like, fuck it, Aaron, you're sitting. Like, it's just things seem to be, to go bad. Like, the second quarter yesterday was, like, it was like watching a car crash. Like, it was crazy. They had this great first quarter, started out really well, taking advantage of the fact that none of the guards for the Celtics were available. And then the second quarter, just a total train wreck.
Yeah. Next question. Wow, man, this is a depressing podcast. Sorry, guys. I mean, listen, we want to be happier about it, and maybe we will later on the show. You never know. Stick around. Danny asks, it was common to see the notion Lowry made that player better when referring to players who left. Examples being Gasol or Ibaka. But is it safe to say that they were a highly underrated and crucial part of the Raptors' offensive and defensive flow? To which I would say, yes, absolutely. Those guys were, I mean, just think about it, man. Serge and Mark are two, like, Mark is going to go to the Basketball Hall of Fame. Serge?
Yeah.
Honestly, as an international player?
I think he's going to be a Hall of Famer. I also think that Serge is going to be involved or influential in whatever the NBA does in Africa. I think he's going to have... I'm excited for Serge Ibaka's Hall of Fame induction. And I think it's going to be kind of one of those weirder stories. But, yeah, he's... Serge is like one of the... Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, all I was going to say is those guys have been in the league.
Yeah.
A dozen years, you know, running. And they have Gasol's aspect. He's been to the All-Star game. They've been on all the defensive teams. Ibaka's led the league in rebounding and stuff like that. They're also just still pretty decent players. So, yeah, absolutely. Because the Raptors replaced – if the Raptors had replaced him with players who are still capable, we wouldn't notice them as much. But because Raptors have replaced him with absolutely nobody, you could just feel the gap that they have in the lineup every single game. Because those guys are quite good. Also, they're smart players too, and that's the thing. It's a lot of players are capable, but they're not necessarily smart. They don't really know how to do. Well, not even smart. They just like they don't know what to do. They're unfamiliar. They're not as intuitive.
Yeah.
And guys who play in the league for that long, they know how to adapt. They have certifiable skills, and you know that's just where it is. So yes, they missed them absolutely. But I also didn't think the centers were kind of. Like, I thought Baines would be a lot better than this, and he has duped me along with everyone else, but, you know, I don't know. How much do you think the fan account made him, you know, in terms of, like, influencing Baines' career? Let's say Aaron Baines didn't have a huge fan account. I don't know what happened.
I feel like you can't mention – my light went out. I feel like you can't mention the Baines fan account is influencing his success because they'll, you know, his – supporters will come find you, but I don't know.
I mean, listen, I got a hive too. Okay,
you do have a hive. He always seemed like a solid NBA quality rotation player, and maybe he can be that. And I do think the like, you know, like there are all these people who are like Raptors fans who are saying like, give this team a chance. They're all dads. They're all away from their families. They're all you know excuse, and for sure it's not fun to. I'm hear them, but I don't know. I feel like Aaron Baines might just take a while to like settle down.
I mean, he does have a newborn baby at home.
Yeah, like
that might take a lot of your time.
His life is probably pretty fucked. I don't envy anyone in the Raptors organization except that they're, you know, millionaires who are over 6 feet tall. But it's like Baines has a very crazy stretch of life to get through, and him being kind of a not so great player on the court is not helping out at all. So I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. In the interest of time, we're going to race through some of these because we still have a lot more questions. Again, we had 150 questions. There's a question about a Lowry trade from Jeff. I am now convinced the Raptors should trade Lowry. What can one reasonably expect in return? If the Raptors trade Lowry, which it still pains me to say, but if they trade him, I think closer to the trade deadline makes a lot more sense. I think the trade deadline is a little earlier in terms of where to relative to the schedule this season. And honestly, a lot of teams are trying to make a push. A lot of teams are trying to do something. So the Raptors are completely out. Kyle could be one of the best available trade assets. Obviously, James is, you know, out there as well. We'll see what happens. But I would expect quite a bit. I think you can, based on the way, if the young core of this team is completely failing in that front, where they don't look like this is a team where you need to preserve cap space, you need to add another star piece and whatever. If that's the case, then I think you can be a little bit more flexible and taking on a little bit more long-term salary. Definitely get some picks and some prospects back. And honestly, I think there'll be a huge market for what Kyle does because of so many teams around the league, if you look around them, if you added Kyle to that team, they would have a huge, huge difference. Let's just look at the East, right? I think Boston could really use Kyle, for example.
Imagine getting back Kemba Walker's contract. I would rather, I can't imagine things I'd rather do than have to watch Kemba Walker not play for the franchise I cheer for night after night.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Sixers. Know. There's no way the Raptors Sixers. Can deal Kyle to the Sixers and not get back Danny Green. And salute to Harrison Sanford and Danny Green. That would be unacceptable. any like there's no way I want
at least we'll get the podcast back, man.
I guess, but like there's just I don't know where the Raptors actually get Kyle Lowry level value back. Mm-hmm. unless there's a sub 28 year old player coming back who's good. And there's no one that like comes to mind.
Well, listen, the Knicks are in the playoffs at the moment. The fifth seed. They could use Kyle. Maybe we can call.
Imagine we get like D'Angelo Russell back. I don't really like D'Angelo Russell's personality, but I don't hate watching him play.
The Bucks could use Kyle. Miami could use Kyle.
But who are the Bucks sending to Toronto?
Yeah, nobody. I don't want to see that. I don't know, man. I don't like talking about this. And quite honestly, we're not at the point where we need to talk about it. So I'm just going to not talk about it at the moment. This is me opinion. I want to entertain the questions. I absolutely do. But, you know, some of it is also kind of tough. Next question from Kate. As someone who has never paid attention to the new lottery rules, because I've never had to, can you please explain the new lottery rules and at what point the odds become approximately equal that the teams have about the same chance at the number one pick? Thank you.
So I think the Raptors are already in that range, so you're good, Kate.
The Raptors are 1-5, are the second worst team in the league by win percentage. Only the Detroit Pistons is worse at 1-6 at the moment. So previously, the lottery odds were much more shifted towards the first three picks. So under the previous rules, then there were changed. And I believe 2017, they announced the change, and then I think they were introduced a year later. But the previous rules, the worst record in the NBA by win percentage has a 25% chance at the first overall pick and has a very, very high chance of staying in the top four. The number two worst overall team has the 20% chance of number one pick and then 15%, and then it drops. Under the new rules, they flatten the lottery odds, which means the Pistons, who are the worst team in the NBA right now, has a 14% chance at the number one overall pick. The Raptors, as the second worst team in the NBA, has 14% chance at the number one pick. The Charlotte Hornets, who are the third worst team, have a 13.3% chance. And Washington, at the fourth, tied for the third worst team, also has a 13.2% chance. After that, the next five teams have a 7.5% chance at the first overall pick, and then it goes down to 3% at the 10th pick. So basically, if you are anywhere in the top, the bottom nine, then you have a somewhat realistic shot at a number one pick, or just not even number one pick, but moving up in the draft to get in the top four. Because if you are the ninth pick, for example, which, the Denver Nuggets right now, the ninth worst team in the NBA, they have a 31.8% chance at a top four pick still. So even if you're just, you don't have to be the absolute worst team in the NBA anymore, because there's no real advantage, for example, to be worse than Detroit at the moment. You really just need to get into, ideally, if you're really, really intentional about tanking, one of the four worst teams. If you just want to be in the mix, you probably want to be between 9-5. And then even if you, after that, it's, pretty much you're staying where you are. But yeah, bottom nine is the short answer.
Doesn't like Mobley fix all of the Raptors' concerns?
I don't know who that is.
He's like a center from USC. He's like supposed to, he's one of the, one of the ones.
Yeah, like Kata said, I've never had the need to look at who these guys are. I saw the Cade Cunningham stuff. I've seen him a lot because I've seen the fade for Cade. This is another question later on from Robbo, who asked, Cade or Evan Mobley. Honestly, obviously, Robbo has a way better chance to answer this, so maybe watch his YouTube channel.
Yeah.
But, from the 5 minutes of Cade I've seen, seems like a, 6'6".
Some real talent, yeah.
Wing player, can handle the ball. Seems to know how to play different positions, too. I've seen him play it out of the post, play out of the perimeter, play in transition, physical going to the basket, shoot the ball. Seems like a guy who would be a lottery pick. And then Mobley, I did watch 2 minutes of him. He seems to have an incredibly high waist.
It's crazy. You ever watch the movie Her with Joaquin Phoenix?
Yes, I have. Yes.
You know who was wearing those like crazy pants?
Yeah. That's basically him, except that's where his waistline is. Like this man, his legs start in South America and end in North America. Like it's yeah. No, honestly, like he the strides that this man has, it must be huge. These guys are literally teenagers.
That's true.
But yeah, I don't know. I hopefully I don't have to know, but we'll you know, if the Raptors continue like this for another, you know, two.
You haven't covered like a top draft pick team, have you?
No.
You started covering the team in like 2014 or something? No.
Yeah. That was the first year I like was consistently writing about the Raptors was the year they turned it all around. So
maybe that'll be like a fun new challenge is to cover. I actually kind of like what happened to the Warriors. I guess it kind of benefited from the like, not benefited. I guess it was like it was easier to not watch them be bad and not make the playoffs with the bubble and all that stuff. But I don't know. They look like they reloaded, and if Klay Thompson's able to come back and be an all-star, they'll be like really good again. But Will, there's some breaking news that I want to get your live reaction for.
All right, let's hear it.
This isn't NBA news, but from the New York Post exclusive, Kim Kardashian and Kanye West are getting a divorce.
Oh. All right, that's pretty big, honestly.
I agree.
Yeah. This is like the Bradgelina split.
Yeah, this is huge. Is true love even possible if Kim and Kanye can't make it?
I was going to say, you're really going to break up the Bound 2 combo?
Exactly. That music video is going to be so sad now.
Honestly, you know when people are together for so long, their personalities like mold and they're like one person? I feel like obviously they're huge, distinct people, but their personalities melded so much together now that it's hard to see them apart, so... I mean, hopefully they can work it out. They got kids and stuff. You never want to see this. Yeah, you don't want to see this.
Yeah, I'm hoping it works out. I hope, you know, their lawyers, we're going to read a lot of dumb tweets. A lot of insane
tweets. Oh, yeah, as if we don't already see a huge amount of dumb tweets from these people. Yeah. Anyway, so hopefully they'll work it out. Next one from Ronald Lowe, which still freaks me out that he's not my dad. very, very close. Very, very close to my name. Let's play this out. If the Raptors don't get significantly better and stay in the bottom of the East, what types of moves should be made? What types of assets should be acquired? And which players should and should not be moved? I think, Norm, you know, like, for example, earlier today, I was in Little Italy, you know, picking up some other errands. And I walked by and this place had like a bunch of rugs on sale outside, and rugs are quite expensive. If you ever try to buy a rug,
I know exactly where you're talking about.
They were selling some rugs, and it was like a 4x6, a decent rug for like $40. And I was like, wow, okay, this is an impulse buy. I will take that. Essentially, the Raptors are that store, and Norm Powell is the rugs on the outside, and it says 40% off. Like that's where Norm is at right now. So, yeah, so Norm probably gets moved. You have to have a serious conversation with Kyle about what you want to do. If Kyle doesn't want to re-sign, you have to move him. There is no sense. And it's not like last year where you ride it out. This year, you absolutely don't do it. You cannot let that happen if he's not willing to re-sign. But you have him a conversation with them first because you have a great relationship with him at the moment, at least the front office and Kyle. Beyond that, so... a lot of guys can't be moved right now. OG has a poison pill contract, which is not impossible to trade him, but it's difficult. Fred just signed. I mean, if you want to trade Fred, go ahead. But I don't want Fred to be traded.
Yeah.
He's been their best player. Pascal, you would need a star player coming back because otherwise you have a better chance of trying to turn Pascal into a star than another way to acquiring. And then the rest of the roster, it's kind of like whatever. If teams really wanted them, they could have them, but they don't. Imagine they have huge trade value, so
yeah, nobody's calling. Not that saying, complicated, like, what's, actually.
Yeah.
Like Norm Powell makes money, he could, you could trade him to bring money back. Seems like the obvious. But
you would have to like put future picks with Norm, I think, to get something at the moment.
Depends on what you're going out and getting, but that's true.
Man, I would have really loved a Norm for Miles Turner.
Do they make comparable money?
No. Turner makes twice as much, but you can like Stanley in there. Honestly, Stanley
nice contract. He is a nice contract for tied to a trade. Because
I need a second round pick back for Stanley. 15?
You need Stanley a second round. 15.
Yeah.
If it gets you 15,
you're close.
If you're able to go out and trade for a big that you would at least like being your seventh man. Mm-hmm. At most, maybe think about starting. I think you go and you can get away with trading them Norman Stanley. You make the trade, but
yeah.
I don't know. the idea of like all the talk of like trading all of your two guards for Victor Oladipo never made any sense to me. It's like, why would you, what's the huge benefit of trading all these guys for a guy who adding to your starting lineup will create problems?
Yeah, but also I think people thought, you know, us included, that the Raptors will perform better than this so far. This, sure. Like a lot of things that you assumed when they turn out not to be true, you have to reassess everything. And that's where we're at right now. Speaking of reassessing, this one from G-Rex says, is it fair to say Masai and Bobby are a big part of the team being unsuccessful? They prematurely gave Siakam his extension when they could have waited when he was restricted, and they didn't address the team's weakness on the front court. The point about Siakam, he was going to get the max. Now, the question is how much of the max, because the Raptors signed into a contract early with a sliding scale of, you know, in terms of bumps in his contract. So if he made NBA second team, for example, or above, there was huge bumps. He made the second team. It was a little bit surprising, but that made a bump. Other than that, he was going to make the max. Last year in this free agent market, I mean, listen, Gordon Hayward got the max. Pascal Siakam, no matter how bad you thought he was going to get the max. So there's no difference there whatsoever. I don't really think that's something you can hold against him. Also, the guy was coming out the most improved player, had the MVP, or not the MVP, but he was, won the championship.
Championship.
20 and 10 in the finals. And then, like, who doesn't give a guy a max contract if you go 20 and 10 in the finals, man? So, you know, that's fine. I also don't think the Raptors have the success they have last year if you don't resolve that Siakam situation without giving him an extension, because he honestly deserved it. I everything in hindsight, but I don't have any issues to pick with that. And don't even think it's totally fair to pick that. The other thing is, are they part of the team being unsuccessful with the picks? Yeah, of course. That's where this team is unsuccessful, is that they have
it's on them.
Horrendous bigs that are, well, not horrendous. That's not fair. Their bigs are giving them nothing in terms of production, because when they started out Aaron Baines against the Celtics and he had 0 points and got scored on, he got benched. And then Alex Len came in and scored 0 points and got scored on. So that's the issue.
Yeah.
So yes, they have a part to play in this.
It's on them. It's like their fuck up.
Yeah, it is. Next one from Vardon. Where with Masai's contract not signed, is it paralyzing the Raptors' ability to make moves? Is MLS hesitant to move future pieces with Masai's status in limbo? Maybe. I mean, I think it would be nice if we knew what was going to happen with the front office to have some permanency there. Because if he's not here, then MLSC is probably naturally going to be like, why am I letting you making these moves, you know?
Yeah. I feel like they should send Masai Ujiri a contract offer with a comma between the first and second digits of the team's winning percentage and say, this is what this is like, to fix this issue and we'll revisit. It's,
by the way, Masai has never had a losing season. Like, pretty much every one of Masai's seasons, Denver, then Toronto, all winning seasons, making the playoffs, close to 50 wins or above. This is a huge test for Masai as well. Next question from Assad. Top three dumbest Raptors on the team right now. So I have a side chat with essentially the Slider Pod people. We talk a lot about silly plays that happen. I would just,
So Norm Powell's number one so far. TD2 is number one. Norm TD Powell's is definitely number two. One.
Yeah. I don't mean three. This in terms of like as people. I just mean like
the Raptors that when they are Raptors, when they have the Raptors chevron on their chest, who's behaved the most dumbly? Yeah, it's like TD2, Norm. Who's number three? I feel like you don't want to give away the third spot. There's so many compelling cases. I feel like Pascal Siakam's got to get it. Like,
yeah,
that's fouling out. Yep. 5 fouls in 7 minutes is like kind of like prodigious. Like,
it's basically which players have made you say WTF the most by watching them play this season. TD, the end of the night, the Raptors make this fake comeback. They cut it to 10 with 2:30. The Celtics have to get their whole, like literally Jason Tatum was wearing ice on his knees and he was like, oh, I gotta come back to the game. Okay. Because, you know, our third unit is giving it up right now. And then to end that run, Peyton Pritchard they're forcing him into a late shot clock. He gets past TD. Okay, that's fine. But it's like 2 seconds up, and TD reaches around behind and taps him on the shoulder as if to say, excuse me. And that gets called as a foul. And it's 3 free throws, and that ends the comeback. I don't care about the game. The game was a loss. It would not have felt right for the Raptors to win that game. But what is going through your mind when you thought defensively, if I tap him on the shoulder right now, that's the right thing to do at the moment? On a desperation heave, why are you tapping a man on the shoulder? That is the biggest WTF moment. Norman's had some big ones. I already explained the one where he raced out of bounds.
Yeah. He's done it a couple times. He did it yesterday. Or he did it... Was it yesterday? It was like a side out of bounds. He was running. He was not... And he like threw the ball into the backcourt to nobody. It was just very... Yeah, he's not done... Whatever. But that's like, you know, Norm's like minimum top five, like, you know, Shaqt and a fool.
Yeah, Shaqt and a fool moments.
Yeah, on the team. Like, he's never been worse than fifth place ever in his.
Pascal is really number three right now. That's
yeah, tough. Pascal's number three.
Listen, that him posting up Peyton Pritchard and then turning the ball over is unbelievable.
He's doing the like thing that drove everybody crazy about DeMar DeRozan, where he would, you know, maybe not get a call that he wanted and then immediately foul out of frustration. Yeah. And it's just like the most Bush League. Like, I do that for Christy Pitts. Like, it's, you got to be better than that.
Yeah.
You got to be a pro. And, you know.
Yeah. All right. Let's keep racing through them. Raisin Brand Advocate. All right. I don't know. I
mean, you're anti fiber, Will?
I'm not anti-fiber. You can just get fiber from other places rather than eating Raisin Bran, man. Where does the insecurity and delusion from our fan base come from? Oh, yeah, this is too complicated of a question. It comes from, one, the Raptors have been terrible for so long. Like, the first 20 years of the franchise's existence, Raptors have won, I think, 48 games at most. Never made it out of the second round. Star players legitimately left. So that's just one that's going to scar you. That's like a hard, like, if you think of 20 years of the franchise as 20 years of your life, as like, that's if you've had some real traumas early in your life. So you're already scarred for adulthood. And then the other part is just like, I think there is a real Canadian US kind of inferiority complex.
I don't think that's what it is.
You don't think that's what it is?
I think here's what it is.
All right.
The Raptors hired as Isaiah Lord Thomas III as their GM, and if there was a picture of delusional insecurity, it's him. The guy was crying in Michael Jordan's documentary. He cursed the franchise, cursed the fan base to be delusionally insecure. Isaiah Thomas has like 2 championships. He's a Hall of Famer, arguably the best team leading point guard ever. I think that you can argue that like there's other guys who are, you know, statistically better than Chris Paul, but a guy who you could trust to be the best player in your team and go out and win. Mm-hmm. And he cursed our franchise. Having him be our general manager was the biggest mistake that it took Masai to undo the curse of Isaiah Lord Thomas III. Mm. Did you know his middle name was Lord?
No, I didn't. Like Lord with an E, like
not with an E,
like the tennis court. Okay. All right. All right. Well, I mean, yeah, I think that is very capable. I think that's all. I mean, I just think it's American, Canadian disconnect sometimes. Where I think it's weird. I'm not an outsider. I've lived in Canada 20 plus years now, but as someone who does also come from another country, it is weird to see two countries who are so similar, practically so similar. Values wise, quite similar. Obviously, the same language, everything like that, but also try to be culturally distinct. It does. I don't know. There's a little brother inferiority complex. There just is, and I think that contributes to it. This one from Wasabi P. Kataro. What's your favorite part of Utah's one-on-one interview? Probably when I figured out that his favorite game was Smash Bros. Because I wrote out all my questions. But when he said his favorite video game Smash, I had to ask him what his main was, and he said Fox, which is Josh. What's your main?
Yoshi, dude. I've mained Yoshi for years. I'm very good with Yoshi. Nobody else. Maybe I'm getting okay with a King K rule if you're playing Smash Ultimate.
Yes.
He's fun.
quite solid.
Who good do you range moves.
So first one was Kirby, then Snake. Snake is extremely hard to use. I'm not good enough with Snake to like battle other people with it.
Yeah.
Got pretty good with Link recently. So yeah, Link's quite solid. Actually, I like Young Link. It's quite good.
Yeah. That's like
the he's a little quicker. He's got a different bomb move. And then who else have I really liked recently? Ike. I don't know why they put Chrome in because he's basically Ike.
So I don't like all the like sword fighters.
Oh, and Rosalina. Smash. I'm pretty
good. Rosalina's like the best fighter in the game, but I don't know how to use it. I'll sometimes play and win, but I don't know what I'm doing. It's just really, really good.
Yeah. We should play sometime. Yeah. I see you online occasionally.
Maybe we'll do it and, tweet it out and play against people who listen. Maybe Utah will show
up. Maybe we call Utah. And then another question is, am I okay? Which I put this in there because it is funny. Listen, I mean, most people obviously probably only listen to the podcast, so it probably is very depressing right now. My general life is fine. I have other issues you figure out in life, but for the most part, like the Raptors are a big part of it, and the Raptors are a little depressing right now, but you can keep it in perspective, man. If you only see me like hot after every game, you might think that I'm different, which is fine. But no, I'm completely fine. Thanks for people for asking. And then we've gone to the signature portion of the show, Malachi's mission. So we have, because Stanley Johnson is now a core piece of the rotation, we have to retire Stanley's suggestions. Josh, are you at least a little bit sad because we went up almost two years with Stanley suggestions?
Am I sad that we have to retire Stanley suggestions? It was a great segment. It really helped us talk about things outside of basketball and about the city. It was fun to have when we had the call-in show, and when call-in show returns, have people call in with their only Stanley suggestions. But I think one of the signature things about that segment is anyone can get it. Anyone can be the butt of that joke. And, I like Malachi's mission. That was pretty clever of you.
Malachi's mission. So, yeah, we had to retire it. I hope Stanley did at least one of the things we suggested. I doubt he did, but
my last suggestion was like, you should make the rotation on this
team. Well, there you go. Congratulations. Stanley, and honestly, he's the least of the Raptors' problems at the moment. Raptors have many problems, but he is like maybe like eighth or ninth on how important his problems are. And by the way, people have asked things like favorite Netflix or recommend some Netflix series, what new hobbies should I suggest? Since watching the Raptors in the spring might not be a good option to spend our time. That all ties into Malachi's missions. Listen, they're Malachi's missions specifically, but they're also your missions as well. If you choose to take these suggestions, me and Josh are dutiful citizens of Toronto. We're also
indemnified of any criminal activity you might get up to.
Yeah, that too. But if we don't really suggest like things like
when
that.
Whenever I referred to anything I was doing as a mission, it was not strictly above board.
That is true. But no, these are strictly, suggestions that we take no culpability for. So, Josh, do you have... Well, this is the first ever Malachi mission. So what's your first mission for Malachi?
My first Malachi mission. It's one that you can do while you're away. And it's something that I didn't know I would enjoy so much. But make some homemade pasta. For the first time in my adult life, I made pasta at home with my partner last weekend. It was a lot of fun. It was like, it's one of those things that you make and you're like, I can't believe I made something this good with my own hands. So that'd be my recommendation. You're not getting a lot of playing time. Maybe you can enjoy some carbs and not feel too guilty about it. It's not like you're gonna be sluggish out there on the court. Cause you're not gonna be playing that much.
Listen, Malachi's missions could change and very well could be. All right.
We have Watson's watch list coming up.
Yep.
Maybe
yep.
Utah's Yelp.
Utah's Yelp. I can't wait, man. Right now we're only hearing Pascal's Yelp every time he goes to the rim. All right, my first Malachi's missions is to order some books. Listen, like, you're on the road all the time. You're on planes. Number one thing to do on a plane is read a book. Especially today, it's so hard to focus. At least for me, I find, but I think for a lot of people, so hard to focus in terms of you have your phone, you have all these distractions, like all these things going on. The only good thing about transit, and I guess planes specifically, is that it shuts you off from those things. All right, same with riding the subway. You can't get reception sometimes. Read a book and, you know, order a book from Flying Books. It's a bookstore in Toronto, local bookstore located on Bloor, I believe, close to Koreatown, if not within Koreatown. Yeah, they have great books. And if you are in the downtown area, you can use the promo code AirDrop and there's free delivery and they'll come to your door. They'll drop it in your mailbox, contactless. And they have a great selection of books. I just bought a couple for Christmas and yeah, I highly recommend it. So yeah, that's your first Malachi mission. But also, you know, if you want to watch some TV, which realistically that's what people are doing, just finished The Wilds on Amazon Prime.
Good.
It was pretty good. It was pretty good. It was one of those shows where afterwards I definitely went on Reddit and read a whole bunch of conspiracy theories about the show.
Speaking of Reddit, after watching something, have you seen Tenet yet? The Christopher Nolan?
No.
Watch it. I don't want to talk to you about it. It's all right. I liked it. I think that.
Where did you watch it?
It's available for video on demand. It's not cheap, but all right. I don't know. I bought it. It was sort of like a Christmas holiday.
All right, fair enough.
It's like the movie that I wanted to watch, and theaters were closed, so I felt. You know when you like decide you're paying for something 6 months out, and then it'll cost whatever it can cost anything. Yeah. It's like Raptors playoff tickets. You say I'm going to a game this year. Yeah, when do we see those again? Like legitimately, I don't think there's really a chance that they come back this year. I don't know if they've committed. Like
they got to also go to the playoffs. Yeah.
Good point. Raptors play-in game would be kind of fun. Like if the Raptors lose to the Hawks in the play-in game, that'd be pretty rough to see.
Yeah.
Just like Kyle Lowry running into Trae Young as he like stops, you know, right after he crosses half court and starts to pull up. Mm-hmm. That's going to be really infuriating.
Good Lord.
yeah, it's like I watched a Tenet. You should too.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, listen, I didn't even even when Mulan came out, I didn't pay for it. So, but I mean, I also heard negative reviews. I heard bad reviews for it. So
yeah.
Also, Mulan has been like a traditional Chinese story that's been made a million times. So, but
and then they got rid of the dragon.
Oh yeah, that's right. Mushu. They got rid of who was it? Charlie
Bird? It was Mushu. I think it was it. Who voiced Mushu?
It was Eddie Murphy. I don't know why I said Charlie Murphy.
I wanted to say it was Crystal. Yeah, it was Eddie Murphy.
Yeah. Oh, wow. All right.
Whoa. Huh. They had Eddie Murphy was the first person to voice Mushu. And in the subsequent movie, Mulan 2, it was voiced by a guy named Mark Mosley, who doesn't really look like Eddie Murphy, if you know what I mean. And I wonder if he...
Wait, isn't that the number one pick this year? What?
No, it was a white guy. I wonder if he tried to impersonate Eddie Murphy, who has kind of a...
I mean, listen, if he could impersonate Eddie Murphy, he should be canceled.
that's kind of what I'm curious about.
Yeah, well, to be honest, I didn't know there was a Mulan 2. The story kind of just ends, you know, so I don't know where the 2 came from, but yeah.
But they didn't want to keep Mushu for the live action version. So, I guess it'd be weird to have a talking dragon in a live action
movie. I mean, I guess so, yeah. But, you know, they could have done something. Yeah. Anyway, thanks everyone for listening. Hope this made you feel marginally better. Maybe, I don't know, man. I think, look, we're in this boat together. That's the beautiful part about this experience of fandom is that you are still part of a community. That community is struggling right now. I think there's a lot of infighting. The Raptors are not winning. That obviously is the cause of all this, but you got to stick it out. You got to stick it out, especially if you're one of the newer fans of the Raptors. Like, I hate to break it to you, but like this happens quite a bit. Historically, the last 7 years have been such a magical ride that sometimes you also have to know like you know, where your roots are. This is like the roots of Raptors existence. And honestly, yeah, this is still a way better situation than they had previous years. So try to keep it in perspective. Hopefully they win. If they don't, major changes will come. But yeah, please continue to listen to the show no matter what you do, though.
Yeah, no matter what you do.
Don't give up on me.
Come hell or high water, listen to Will.
Don't give up on me. People are like, Will, I feel so bad for you. I can turn off the TV, but you have to keep watching. And I'm like, yes.
Listen, like, subscribe, comment below. Talk about how shitty you think I am on all these podcasts. We need engagement for Will.
Wow. Has that been happening?
I don't know.
What's going on? Are people slandering your name? Wow.
I don't pay attention. But yeah, rate, comment, like, subscribe. Follow William at William underscore Lou on Twitter.
That's less important. I don't know. That's less important. Just listen to the podcast.
Read 10 things.
Read 10 things. I had to convert 10 things. That's how bad it was.
Watch Run It Back when it runs back. I don't know.
Yeah.
Wash your hands, wear a mask, keep
wash your
distance.
Hands. No, shout period. Out to all of my, regardless of the pandemic, wash your hands.
Shout out to all of my doctor friends who, like, now beyond just being envious of them because they're rich, I'm envious that they have the vaccine. It's just like, I guess shout out to you. This is cool.
I don't know if that's envy is the right word there, but, you know, it is what it is.
It is what it is. All right.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for listening. Appreciate you, Josh.
You too.
And, yeah, let's get through this together.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Do you ever feel like your brain is on overdrive and your mind is constantly racing? The plans, worries, and to-do lists are never ending. Calm can help your mind take a break from the noise by softening anxiety symptoms in the moment and helping you cope with day-to-day stressors. Calm is the number one app for sleep and meditation, giving you the power to calm your mind and change your life. For listeners of the show, Calm is offering an exclusive offer of 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/stressless. Go to calm.com/stressless for 40% off unlimited access to Calm's entire library. That's calm.com/stressless.